like vultures feeding on a dead carcass. The music industry has been scavenged, and nothing else is left except its bones. And even then, those bones have been used in a broth. In other words, there's almost nothing left about the music industry that hasn't been turned upside down, opened up, analyzed, criticized, exposed, discussed, and discarded. Most people can read about what it's like being in a band from a myriad of autobiographies, biographies, compendiums, anthologies, photo books, and walk away with a pretty close facsimile of the real experience. But that's only the part of the real experience that's in focus, under the lights, and in the public eye. Critics like to appear to be experts in the field of music. Some adapt an even loftier air than the egomaniacal subjects they like to poke fun at. But no matter how easily they can roll out a band's discography or pontificate on the history of some iconic musical pioneer, they will never ever know the feeling it truly is to be in a touring band, night after night after night. Sure, they can write about their crazy weekend with whatever band they're hitched to, but their brief visit soon ends, and they are back home in front of their keyboard while the band trudges onward out on the road. And while the focus and the most fun happens under the lights on stage, the true experience of touring in a band happens in between the lines. These are the fleeting moments that are hard to catch, hard to describe. They happen quietly, off stage, without words, but understood and shared by every single touring band. Now, as hard as it is to describe, I'm going to try to describe it here. One of the most common yet hardly ever discussed experiences of touring life are the first moments when you and your camp meet the band and the crew that you will be touring with for the next several days, weeks, or months. When the tour is glamorous and expensive and gigantic, sometimes these camps don't even meet. But the lower you go on the totem pole, the closer the quarters are that the bands have to live within, sometimes literally on top of one another. If there's a shared past, these moments are easier and smoother and can be more like a friendly reunion. But if the bands have never met, this moment is much like a blind date, where you've seen the other person's profile but are still cautious and suspicious of one another. And of course, the relations are different depending on whether you're headlining the tour or opening the tour. Whenever we've been the openers on a tour, we know our place as guests, and we do not make any assumptions or take any liberties. This has ingratiated us with bands and crews over the years, and it's the respectful approach to take. When we're headlining a tour, we try to make the opening band feel at home, especially if it's a band that we personally invited on the tour. They are our guests, and we want them to know we want them to be here. However, this isn't as smooth as it sounds. Often tours are packaged together that are the results of cashed-in residual favors drawn up in backrooms, and 99% of the time, these packages, mushed together, do not work. In fact, it ends up becoming a war of a tour between battling factions. There was one time we were saddled on a package tour with a band where the singer took an immediate dislike to me, before even meeting me. Fortunately, there was another band on the tour that hated this person, and the two of our bands bonded together in solidarity. I still made an effort, however, to say hello to him every day I'd see him. And finally, on day 9 of the tour, he said hello. It didn't matter much. He turned out to be such a pompous asshole. Another time, an opening band of ours went over their set time, and when they were told by our crew to finish their set, the lead singer turned around and yelled, "Fuck off." Two bands that are prime examples of the inflated egos and entitled dickheads that are rampant in the music biz. Haven't heard much from both those bands in quite some time. Wish I could tell you who they were here, but you know, I really can't. I got to take the high road. But going back to when bands want to tour with each other and are fans of each other's bands, then you have the makings of an incredible tour, the kind of tour you dream about. When we were asked to tour with the Backyard Babies in 2001, it was because Dragon had seen our band and dug our band. We shared a bus, and I still consider that tour to be one of my most memorable and favorite of all tours. And we became friends for life on that tour. Now, when we headline, we take bands out whose albums we love, and hope to God that's enough of a common ground to get along. So far, we've been pretty right on the money and have had great tours with Admiral Sir Cloudesley Shovel, Bombus, Judah, The Biters, Dead Lord, 77, and just this past month, we finished 2.5 weeks with the one and only Audrey Horn from Bergen, Norway, a five-piece hard rocking outfit that gave us a run for our money every night. Even though they revel in the majesty of rock and roll, within the ranks, some members bring with them esteemed metal credibility. Guitarist Thomas Tofthagen is a member of SOG. Arve Isdal, or Icedale, the other guitar player in the band, is a member of Enslaved. And Thomas, Arve, and bassist Espen Lien all together spent 2 years as Paul Di'Anno's backing band throughout Norway and Poland. We asked Audrey Horn to tour with us a few years back, but because of Icedale's duties in Enslaved, they couldn't do it. Finally, it happened, but even with both our bands wanting this tour to happen, the proverbial ice needed to break. When it shortly did, the tour went off without a hitch, and this has been one of the greatest tours we've done in recent years. So, to mark it, I felt it necessary to bring singer Torkjell Red, or Toshi, as everyone calls him, onto the podcast to shoot the shit and commemorate the tour with an episode. Tours are all about playing live, promoting your latest record, but they're also about meeting and getting to know people, people you like and respect what they do. So here you have a conversation that reflects most of the conversations that were had during this tour. We started talking about Kiss, but eventually moved on to other subjects, especially one that I've never really gone on record talking about, tattoos. Toshi, being a tattoo artist by day, was the perfect person with whom to start a discussion. I want to thank Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones for supporting the podcast. Thanks to you for taking time to listen to the podcast. And if you haven't already, please leave a rating or a review on iTunes. This helps the podcast's profile and lets everyone know how popular the podcast is and lets me rub other people's noses in it. Okay, let's start. Here we go. Toshi of Audrey Horn is this episode's guest on the official Danko Jones podcast, and it starts now. The Danko Jones podcast is the best around. Nick Leonard, Guinness, Danko's go out to love for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes get me in from fucked up. Stop playing, hang down, down.
There's only one podcast to listen to in this world, and that's the Danko Jones podcast. Don't be a dick. Don't be listen to the Danko Jones podcast.
The Danko Jones podcast is simply superb, splendidly fine, wonderfully wild, very divine.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, get ready because the Danko Jones podcast starts. No!
Toshi, it's good to talk to you.
Likewise, man.
We've been talking about doing this for the last week, I think.
Yeah, we have.
How's the tour going for you?
Well, it's really nice. We we're supporting this great band, so how can it not be good, you know?
Agreed.
You agree? Cool.
Well, it's been a long time coming, this
tour with you guys on. We asked you like 2 years ago, I think, for our last album, Fire Music. And there's a problem in your band. There's a guy who's moonlighting or doing double duty.
Yeah,
and sometimes that coincides with Audrey Horn.
Yeah, he's a two-timer.
Yeah.
Classic two-timer.
Yeah.
Cheating guy.
Yeah.
So, no, we were really happy when we were able to do it now, mm-hmm. finally. Because it was with a heavy heart we had to turn you down, you know.
Yeah.
Well, how is that with Icedale in Enslaved on guitar and Audrey Horn and guitars on Enslaved? How is that juggling all that? And is he always constantly on tour?
He is always on tour, more or less. He's not much home anyway. But now it's it takes a bit of planning. But you know, if you know, we're grown-ups. Mm-hmm. We're able to make plans. Some of us, at least.
Yeah.
So.
Thing I gathered from you is you guys are pretty organized, and you got your shit together.
Yeah, well, that's you're one of the few people who actually say that. So I think we do. We always have this idea that every other band is way more organized and way more professional than we are. Than we're just a bunch of clowns running around playing rock music. But I think we got our shit together pretty much.
Yeah. So one of the things that got me to go, hey, you know, maybe you should come on the podcast, is that people who kind of listen to this podcast regularly, semi-regularly, they know that it also moonlights as a Kiss podcast. So you and I had a few Kiss discussions on this tour already, 2 weeks in. And I said, hey, let's talk about Kiss. And you come on the podcast. So one of the things that you turned me on to, that you told me about, was Peter Criss does these guided tours. This is probably something that most Kiss fans know, but I had no idea. And you have a friend who was on one of these Peter Criss shows, tours.
Yeah. I have. I just briefly texted with him about it. So I need to talk to him when I get back home and find out more about what it is. But apparently it's Peter Criss. He does this guided tour and show people where you know where they rehearsed and where they did gigs and this and that, and then he tells like stories about, you know, like stuff that probably people don't know. So
I would love to be on that tour. I would love to see the guided tour of Peter Criss. Now, is this in Los Angeles?
Yeah, he did one in Los Angeles, and I think he's doing one now in June in New York, which, I would go for the New York one.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
where they started out, and it's probably a cool thing. You probably get to hear a lot of interesting stories about how much of an asshole Gene Simmons was to him. And or maybe not. Maybe he's polite and does the.
Well, they've all really kind of shat on each other at this point. But I kind of think. Have you read all the autobiographies?
No, not all of them. I read Esfrilius, and I read Paul Stanley's, and I read some a bunch of like Kiss in general. But I have not read Peter Criss's and not Gene Simmons.
Peter's is the craziest, I think. Paul's is, I think, the most realistic and the one I like the best. But Peter's, he really, I mean, if he didn't tell, if he left stuff out, he surely put a lot of stuff in that was incriminating to him, too. He doesn't really come out very likable at the end, although I don't know if he realizes that or not. But, yeah, I would love to just hear any shit talking anyways. But the thing is, you are a huge, bigger Kiss fan than I am because you have some Kiss tattoos.
I have Kiss tattoos, but I think I don't think that makes me a bigger fan. I think
that's a commitment, man.
It's
lifetime
a commitment. Yeah, it's a commitment. It is.
I can sell my records.
Yeah, well, I can sell my body, man. Come on, it's not a problem. No, but you, with the lecture you did, and that's taking Kiss nerding to a whole other level.
It's true, it is another level. But I mean, getting a tattoo now, you're a tattoo artist by by profession.
Yeah.
Did you do that yourself?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I have one in the back of my neck. It would have been extremely hard to do myself. No, it was one of my coworkers, an American woman called Sandy. She did that. And then I have one, Paul Stanley, on my thigh.
That was the one I was referring to.
Yeah.
You could have done that.
Yeah. I'm probably not as good because this is what it was done by. A guy called Uncle Al in Berlin.
Okay.
Yeah. So he and he. I can't.
When, a known when, guy. Really.
Yeah. Yeah. In the
tattoo world.
Yeah. In the tattoo world, he's a known guy. And the cool thing is that he was like he liked Kiss. He's not like a big fan, but he really liked Kiss. But his favorite like soundtrack in the world is War of the Worlds. So he keeps listening to that one, and that's very like.
Yeah, bombastic.
Yeah, very bombastic. So we were sitting there and talking, and he wanted to play that. And I said to him, dude, have you heard The Elder? And he was like, no. So I put on The Elder, and The Elder sort of has a bit of that.
Right.
And he totally
dramatic
fell,
vibe.
Yeah, he totally fell in love with that album.
Really? I feel The Elder's going through a resurgence in popularity.
Yeah, because when it came out, it was for many, many years, it was hated.
I was one of those people.
Yeah, yeah. But now, I loved it back then, but I loved anything. Kiss could do whatever they wanted.
Right.
I loved everything they did. I was not very critical to whatever Kiss was doing. But now people are going like, yeah, it's actually quite a good album. So I think it's sort of... got over when people got over being embarrassed about it when they grew up and was like, you don't have to be embarrassed about stuff you like,
right?
Then people were like, yeah, well, it's kind of cool actually.
Right. I get that whole thing. Hey, you know, it's getting cold. It was at this time that Toshi and I decided to take the podcast indoors, and it continues from here onward. Well, yeah, so you got the Paul Stanley tattoo on your leg. So does that make you, because I am, does that make you a member of Team Paul?
I'm very much a Team Paul guy. And like you said, when I read his biography, I didn't read it. I bought the audio book.
Right.
That Paul reads himself.
Yeah, yeah.
So much more fun.
Yeah, I've read it and I've heard it, and it's great. Both are great.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you read that, I think you know nobody's perfect, but I think Paul is the guy who's more down to earth. Mm-hmm. He's not as up his own asshole as Gene Simmons seemed to be, and it's Freely and Peter Criss, you know, they're pretty much fuck ups on many levels. But Paul Stanley, he seems like a cool guy. I think he is.
As normal as you can be being like the singer of one of the biggest bands that ever was.
Mm, yeah.
Your reality is really heightened. It's another kind of reality, whether he is aware or not. But I think he is in some
way. And he seems to have a lot of self-irony and are able to step outside and look at himself. Like there's one part in the book where he when he met his wife when she moves in with him, and mm-hmm. he has this like big picture painted of himself, and he wants to paint her into that picture because it's a picture of him and his son, isn't it? Yeah,
I think so. But
yeah,
I remember
and he was like, yeah, I'm gonna have you painted in that picture, and she's like. Dude, who puts this on the wall? You have to paint over this. You can't have this. You know, you can't just wake up and look at yourself like that, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure his wife has some job in grounding him to a certain degree as well.
Yeah.
So with that tattoo, you are a tattoo artist. How'd you get into tattooing? This is something intrinsic with rock and roll. You're the singer of a rock and roll band. It goes hand in hand almost. How long and how?
Well, I've always been fascinated by tattoos. I remember, I remember the first time I was fascinated by tattoos. It was, of course, the Paul Stanley's Rose. That was because I saw that as a kid, you know. And
that was one of the only tattoos in rock and roll for a long time.
Yeah. And then and I saw that and I liked it, but it was sort of, it didn't, it was just a small cool thing. But I remember when Iron Maiden made their Power Slide album, I read a Swedish magazine that we could buy in Norway called OK. And there was a story there about the production recording of that album. And they did it in Bahamas. So there were pictures of them on the beach with palm trees and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they had gotten tattoos, like Steve Harris and Dave Murray and Adrian Smith, I think. They all had Dave Murray has a unicorn and some weird stuff. They had these. And that was when I was like, holy shit, that is cool.
Yeah, back then you could remember the guys who had them.
Yeah.
Because there was no one was getting them.
No. So I grew up and I went to art schools and I had a plan of doing illustrations and stuff like that, because I did a lot of that for other bands, like for T-shirts and artwork for albums for local bands, friends and stuff. And then I'd started getting tattoos myself. So I had a tattoo studio that I went to. And at one point I was like, why am I not doing this? This is perfect for me. I'm good at drawing and I play in a rock band. Mm-hmm. This is, because like you said, they sort of fit together. Mm-hmm. But it was actually quite late, because I worked with illustration and stuff like that before. So I started tattooing maybe 16, 17 years ago now.
Okay.
So it was not something that I was, as a kid, like, you know, you grow up and you want to be a firefighter or a police officer or whatever. It wasn't like that. I had no idea. I think when I was a kid, I didn't know that this was something you could do.
Right.
You know. Tattoos was just something some people had.
Well, it's, I'd say only in the last 20 years, tattoos have suddenly exploded.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's crossed over into the mainstream where, you know, soccer moms have, you know, tattoos and armbands and what have you. Mm. And so obviously that helps your job. You get a steady stream of people who, maybe 20 years ago, that kind of person wouldn't have walked into a tattoo parlor because of the stigma of it being like, oh, only this kind of, oh, these dirty people get it and all this stuff. That was a stigma. But now it's like everybody gets them.
It is. And that's sort of the good and the bad side of tattooing. Right. Because, of course, most tattoo artists are happy that there's a lot of work for them out there, you know. But at the same time, it kind of loses the edge.
Right.
It's because like earlier when you saw someone with like, especially someone with many tattoos, you were like, holy shit, who's that?
Yeah.
You know? But today it's like, he's probably a bartender or he works at the Levi's store, you know?
Yeah.
So that's sort of the sad thing that it's not special anymore, you know. It's like, but then again, you know, I have a few tattoos and I think it to me, I look the way I want to look, you know, and as you say, if a soccer mom or a bank manager for that matter has tattoos, they normally have different style of tattoos. So
really,
yeah. So, if you go to like I said, if you go to a bar or to a Levi's store, then the guy behind that could be a rock star or he could be a sailor or whatever. You know, that's all sort of blended together.
And do you have any tattoos that you regret having?
No, I have tattoos that I probably wouldn't have tattooed today, but that was life. Yeah, that was then. You know. So I'm not gonna cover any of my tattoos or I hardly redo them either because I like it when they're like when they've been worn.
Right.
You know, they shouldn't look fresh all the time.
Right.
Those were the ones that scared the shit out of me the most when I was a kid, is those kind of worn down, almost like handmade, like just kind of in a garage or something. Those were scary.
Yeah. Like the old, like old sailor guys, they, you know, they made it with, often they didn't make it with machines. They just used needles and they used shoe cream or shoe polish or whatever,
right,
which is black, and then they just used used alcohol to thin it out,
right,
until it got like liquid enough to use it as ink,
right,
and of course your body, that's why they look not, it was black then but now they're like green, bluish, and that's because your body rejects stuff it doesn't want, or
but even that looks cool.
Yeah, I think so. I love that. Yeah. We had one guy who came into our shop and he wanted to fix an old tattoo, and he showed it, and it was like, it was kind of hard to see what it was and everything, and it turned out that he'd gotten it from like this legendary old, now deceased tattoo artist that was based in Copenhagen, and we were like, dude, that's, you're like a museum, man. You can't freshen that up. That's like, it's like having the first press of the first Kiss album. You know,
right,
you don't go and change it into a CD or whatever. You know, you keep it like that.
Right.
Oh, that's very interesting. Now you're talking to somebody who has no tattoos.
Yeah,
I have none.
No. But that, you know, being in a rock band today, the most like rock and roll thing you can do in a rock band today is not to have a tattoo.
That's what I've been saying for years.
Everyone's got it.
Yeah.
When I noticed the trend starting to take hold, I was like, now would be the time to get it, but also the time to never get it.
Yeah.
You know, and over the years, I will say there's been a few where I've gone, wow, that's fucking cool. Like, I could see myself having that.
Yeah,
you know, but if there was one, it would be the Paul Stanley.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah,
and that would be it.
Yeah, I talked to the guy who did Alan, the guy who did Paul Stanley on my thigh. We talked about that because he, you know, he grew up. He also had that memory of that Paul Stanley tattoo.
Yeah, man.
And I said that, well, you know, I should almost have it, but I said that I can't have it here because it's the whole thing covered. He was like, "Fuck it, blast over, just." Just do it on top of the other, just to have it. I was like, no, I don't think so. But
yeah, you had to keep it clean to have that whole.
But my Paul Stanley is a portrait of Paul Stanley, and then there's a big rose underneath it because Paul Stanley and roses sort of belong together.
Yeah.
Now, have you tattooed? Because you know, in tattoo parlors in Toronto, I notice when they tattoo someone famous, they take a photo of the person and then they put it in the window. Have you done anyone of note?
Well, I've tattooed people that are famous, but I don't have a picture of them in the shop. No, I don't.
Who?
I tattooed Hank von Helvetin.
No way.
Yeah, I did.
That's super cool.
That's a cool story because my wife, Hank, was married to my wife's sister.
Okay.
So we, you know, we.
Right.
We got together for like holidays and stuff like that, and
so you guys were brothers-in-laws.
Yeah, we were, and then me and my wife, we live in Bergen, and they lived in Oslo. He's not married to her anymore, but he got divorced and remarried. But anyway, they lived in Oslo back then, and he called me because me and my wife was going to Oslo, and he called me and he said, "Dude, can you bring your tattoo kit over, and tattoo me?" And I was like, yeah, sure. And part of this story is that when I met my wife, her mom, my mother-in-law, she was like, that was the one thing that would make her cut her daughter out of her will was if she got any tattoos, because that was just like, she hated tattoos. So when I when Hank asked me to come bring my tattoo kit. I did that, and I said to him, "Okay, so we have, you know, I don't have a shop in Oslo, so we have to do it like in your kitchen or something." And he was like, "No, dude, we're doing it in our mother-in-law's kitchen because she has to face her demons.
Oh my God.
And I said,
oh my God.
Yeah, yeah. Are you sure about this? And he was like, yeah, this got to happen. She has to face her demons. So, so I said, cool, but you're going to be the one who asks or tells her. And he was like, you sure? I will. So he went to her and said that this is going to happen. You know, you have to face your demons. And so very reluctantly, she agreed to this. And so I sat in her kitchen tattooing Hank while she was standing from like on a good distance and watching it with a very skeptical look in her eyes. And then she kind of, as we did it, she kind of slowly started moving towards us and started looking and was like, what do you do this and what do you do that? And she was like, oh, okay, so you do it like this. Oh, I didn't know, blah, blah, blah. And then like afterwards, she was like, wow, this was really interesting. And like now she's like, when I get a new tattoo, she's like, ooh, that's really nice. And she totally changed her viewing of tattooing because of, she's been exposed to a lot of tattoos with me and seen, she sees when I post my work and stuff like that. So, but Hank was like, that was his way of,
wow,
of making her face her demons.
Well, I think we all know Hank's got some balls on him.
Yeah, he does.
So this is an interesting thing with your mother-in-law. Now, when she first found out her daughter was going out with you, you obviously had tattoos. How was that like?
Well, her daughter was grown up, so there was like not much she could do about it. But I asked her after a while, and I was like, "So, I asked her, what did you think when you saw me?" And she was like, "You have met my other son-in-law, Hank. There's really nothing you could have done that would have shocked me."
You actually,
he kind of opened the door for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To put it that way.
Okay, so he was first.
Yeah, he was first.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, after Hank, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're pretty much immune to anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty funny. Well, that's really cool. So Hank is definitely someone of note. So what is the tattoo, if anyone was to kind of Google an image of Hank?
That tattoo is actually...
topless. You know?
Yeah, the one that I did on him was... I actually sort of finished... It was a tattoo that had been started, but the guy that did it, something happened to him. I don't know what, but he stopped tattooing.
Mm.
And couldn't tattoo anymore. I don't know why, but so he asked me if I could sort of finish it and add some stuff to it and make it look good. And it was like a knight or a crusader or something like that.
Where is it on Hank?
It's on his arm, on his upper arm.
Cool.
Mm.
Anyone else?
There's got to be.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I tattooed a lot of like rock musicians, but. Most of them are locals. I tattooed one of the guys in Legendary Shack Shakers. If you heard them, American band.
Yeah, yeah, I've heard of them.
I tattooed the guitar player there, and I tattooed like in Bergen, people from black metal bands there. So like Hades Almighty, I tattooed Eva from Enslaved. I tattooed, who else? A bunch of these guys, really. Mm.
Well, Bergen is like ground zero for black metal, I suppose. Yeah.
So a lot of them. And some, of course, a lot of musicians that are more like famous in Norway. Kaisers Orchestra.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, really famous.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I love Bergen. We've been playing there.
It's a nice city.
Yeah, playing there for years. We played at the garage back in 01, and we still play that club when we go there because we like it there.
Yeah, it's a really it's kind of like we just did. They had sort of a benefit show because the club has been struggling a bit.
Oh,
well, it's clubs in general are struggling more because it's harder. The competition, there's a lot of like big shows that's like, because Bergen used to be a place where there were no big shows. There were just like small club bands who played there, and bigger acts, but they played at those clubs. And then these days they have like Metallica and Bruce Springsteen playing there. And so I guess it's just the fact that that club has been exposed to so much competition, so they've been struggling. Mm-hmm. So there was like this thing called seven days in the garage, where bands played for a week, like every night there would bunch of bands who played there, and I played there, and because as like I said on stage there, I have to do this because this is sort of where I grew up. I grew up as a musician. It's where I went to see all the like the first like really cool shows that I got to see. That was there, and that's where we hung out as musicians and met other musicians and formed bands and broke up bands and got drunk and so to me that club is very special.
And from a different perspective, me too. Like for us, it was on our first tour of Europe, so I was pretty wide-eyed. And pulling up to Bergen, I didn't know where the hell I was, you know. Got out of the old van that we were touring in and met Martin Holmes. He's there in Bergen. And whenever we're in Bergen, usually in Norway, anywhere, we usually end up with a visit with Martin.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of my best friends. He's a brilliant guy.
Takes good care of us in Britain.
Yeah, I played in bands, several bands with him over the years, and we always, you know, we always hang out. We always go out for drinks. We go on holidays together. He's a great guy with a big heart, and he's very passionate about everything he does, especially these days security. And he's really good at it. So he's kind of become the guy in Norway to go to when it comes to crowd management and safety.
Yeah, that's where we last saw him, I think, at the Volbeat show. We played in Bergen.
Yeah.
We opened for Volbeat in Bergen, and there he was. I think he was doing exactly that.
Yeah, he does that.
And barbecues. I follow him on Instagram. Great barbecues.
Yeah, you know.
Great dishes.
Whenever you go to him, you're pretty sure that you're going to have a great meal.
Yeah, know? Right.
Yeah. No, the first time we went to Norway, I mean, we were in the garage in Bergen, and I'll never forget it. Like, you know, I'm coming from Canada. You know, it is what it is, being a rock band in Canada. We get in Norway and in Scandinavia, and it's like beautiful women, beautiful people in general everywhere. And I'll never forget the garage. There was this one girl, and she was, in my mind's eye, I remember her to be extremely attractive. And she's wearing a helicopter shirt. She's in the front row. I'm like, what is this place? Like, where I'm from, girls don't wear helicopter shirts and go to rock shows. Like, really hot girls don't do this. Like, what is going on here? No one even know. Like, helicopters? Like, I hadn't really kind of clued in that, well, helicopters are from next door in Sweden. And I just was like, wow, this is amazing. And I'll never forget that garage show because of that girl.
Yeah.
We remember that tour very well. And so, yeah. That was great. So this tour is winding down, man.
It is.
Fucking really short and sweet.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And it's been, like, every show has been totally packed. And people are really, really happy. And so it's perfect.
Yeah. Great for me.
Great for me as well.
All right. Thanks, Toshi, for being on the podcast. And have a good show tonight, man.
You too, man.
How did you?